Jared, what's your favorite club to hit?
Driver, full send.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Full Send Podcast, the inside look at life on the PGA Tour with our man Jared Wolf. Got a special guest today, the man behind it all, who's helped Jared refine his swing and get to a place where he's very consistent. So we got Corey Kaufman on the show today. Corey runs the Golf Academy in Louisville, Kentucky. Corey, great to have you on the show, man.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate being here.
How's life in Kentucky? It's starting to cool down this time of year. You got some heaters going. What's the driving range like over there at Persimmon Ridge?
You know, it's not bad. We actually like 65 today, 67 the day before. So it's actually not bad for Kentucky. You know, this
for
south
December.
Of the, yeah. This is warm for us. So yeah. No, it's going well.
Yeah, you don't catch these kind of years or these days too often in December. So you take them when you can get them. That's for sure. Absolutely. So tell me a little about the Golf Academy. You've been doing that for 20 years. How did that get started? You know, what was your entrance into the game of golf as a player, as a coach now? And just tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, for sure. So my grandfather got me started. You know, when I grew up, you know, typical, you know, all sports, played baseball, basketball, that type of stuff. And my grandfather got me into golf, and it was one of those things, like, I just played with him, not very seriously, but as I kept going and kept learning about the game, like, I kind of got more excited about it. And back when I played, golf was a game that you played when you couldn't make other teams, you know, so it's obviously a lot different now, but back then, like, you know, I still played baseball and basketball all through high school, all the way to junior year. You know, I went to St. X in Louisville. And then I was like, you know what? I'm just going to focus on golf. That's what I'm best at. Unfortunately, I really liked the other sports better, but I was better at golf. And so that's what I did. And so played at Bellarmine University, and then played professionally after that for a few years. And then really enjoyed the teaching part of golf. You know, the coaching aspect. My dad was a college basketball, baseball coach. So I just enjoyed the coaching part. So once I stopped playing full time, I got into more coaching. And then after that, I realized, like, it's a lot easier to teach full time than it is to coach full time, less travel, that type of stuff. Especially after playing full time, I was actually excited to be in one place. And so coaching golf required a lot more travel. And so playing or coaching or teaching full time was way easier for me. So then I got into the coaching aspect and so then started the Golf Academy and man, we've been doing great. Have a couple of assistants, Josh Snyder, Garrett Nielsen, that helped me and they do the younger kids and we just, you know, they do a great job. I just kind of take some of the kids that they have and try to make them a little bit better, trying to mess them up and just move along. So yeah, man, everything's good.
No, that's an awesome story, man. And, you know, just the playing days, you know, knowing what it's like to be out on tour and play. Tell me a little bit about, you know, who you like to coach or who you like to teach right now. Do you start at a really young age with players? Do you really prefer them maybe when they're, you know, more developed in high school and college? You know, what's that sweet spot or what do you guys do there?
You know, it's funny you ask that because I feel like there are days and weeks and months where I'm like, man, I just want to teach the better player, the ones who are trying to play in college or the ones who are trying to play professionally. But then after a little bit of that, I'm like, man, I would love just to teach somebody who's excited about getting the ball off the ground. So like, you know, we're kind of up for anything because the challenges are still the same. It's all relevant to the person's goals, right? And so if the better player is trying to play in college or the professional is trying to make a check, like that's their goals. And so that enters different types of stresses, different type of expectations. But if somebody's just trying to learn how to play golf, that's their goals. And they have their own expectations and their own stressors as well. So it's all relevant depending on the player. But, you know, I mean, like I said, we're up for anybody. I enjoy teaching the complete array of players. You know, just, I don't know. It just kind of depends on the personalities. I like meeting new people. And so if, you know, if it's an interesting person and that type of stuff, then it's, we're going to have fun. So it just depends.
How does having played competitively, especially at the highest level playing professionally, how has that impacted, you know, how you approach teaching, especially young kids or, you know, kids that are thinking they might want to play in college or college players that think they might want to play professionally? How does that experience out on tour impact how you teach and what is the value that been for you?
Well, I think for me, it, I'm able to say, hey, here's what's going to happen. Here's what to expect. You know what I'm saying? Like, so much about playing after college and even in college is not about golf. So even if you have a player who's getting ready to go play in college golf, right, especially if they're going out of town. So they're going to go out of town. There's so many new experiences that they've never had before. And so you're going to a new state, a new city. You have a new coach, a new team, a new school, all this new things. And so if I'm able to say, here's what to expect when you get there, here are the things to expect. And by the way, before you get there, we're going to try to cover half this stuff. Like, it's a benefit for the player. Same thing professionally. All right, when you get there, you're going to have to figure out, you know, you got your rental car, right? You have your housing, you've got food, you've got all these different things that you have to take care of. So, all right, here's what to expect. When you get there, you got to do this. You got to check this box. You got to check this box. All this stuff you have to take care of before you even play golf. So if I'm able to help them through that process, like, to be honest, man, like, I think that's a big deal, because they're going there solely thinking they're focusing on golf. In reality, golf is like 40% of what's going on. The other 60% is all the stuff outside of golf. And if I can help them with a 60%, then that 40%, they're allowed to focus on more than most other players because the coaches have never been through that process. So I think that's a big benefit that I can help those type of players with.
Yeah, that's really critical, you know, and since golf is such a mental game, a huge part of that is learning how to block things out for a certain period of time, how to focus and how to overcome a lot of those distractions. Like you said, it just continues to grow. Even professionally, I know Jared and I have talked about the difference between the Korn Ferry Tour and the PGA Tour, just in terms of distractions and how many people are out there, how many security guards are out there, you know, just all the different, the, you know, media that are out there. It's just different, just enhanced a little bit more. So that's really critical that, you know, you have that under your belt. You can help players along with understanding what they're about to walk into. So that's really awesome. Let me give you a quick plug. So if anybody wants to learn about the Golf Academy, go to thegolfacademypr.com and you can check out all of what Corey and his staff are doing there in Louisville, Kentucky, especially if you're in the area. But you also, now, are you doing any virtual lessons? Do you do any video work with people who aren't in Louisville?
Yes, 100%. Yeah, I do. Most of my college kids don't live in Louisville, obviously when they're in college. So we sure. Do that type of stuff. I do have a 3D. That's what I was telling you. I was like, dude, send me your swing face on, because I've got 3D equipment that can turn your face on video into a 3D figure and to help give me measurements for everything. So that's been a huge game changer for us as far as the virtual world and FaceTime and long distance stuff. That's been awesome.
Now, how accurate is the 3D virtual thing? Is it going to make my waistline accurate to what it really is? Is it going to shrink me down a little bit? Like, what does it do?
Well, I will tell you that. So it's funny about the waistline, because one of the things you have to put in is your hip to hip measurement. So it's going to be legit on that.
Oh wow, that's impressive. That
what it's not legit on is hair loss, because I still look bald. I still look bald on the avatar. You know, so I'm like, okay, this is legit, right? You know, so I put myself on it. I was like, all right, I got to test this thing out. Put myself on it. It showed me at like a solid like 78% shoulder turn, 34% hip turn. I'm like, okay, this thing's good. Because that's where I feel like I am, you know. So no, it's actually really, really good. I've actually been pretty impressed with the product. So
yeah, and technology alone is amazing. I mean, you've been teaching 20 years. You probably remember back when you were taping kids' swings on a VHS recorder, I imagine.
Oh well, you know, I grew up with the Jody Mudd, the Mudds, that type of stuff, and Eddie Mudd was my teacher. And I remember he packed the big old VHS recorder. Shoulder. And I remember one full hour lesson. This is no joke. One full hour lesson. He messed up when the record on, record off was happening. And so he recorded everything but my golf swing for a full 45 minutes.
That's awesome.
We go in at the end of the lesson. Of course, you know, you take the VHS out, you pop it in the recorder or the VHS machine. It throws it up on the TV. And on the TV, you take paper out, you take dry erase markers, you draw lines on the TV, right? So he has all his lines drawn, and he hits play. And of course, the next thing it shows is his shoes. And he's like, you got to hit me. So he hits play again. And then it shows me at setup, all the lines are perfect. And then it goes right to his shoes again. And he cusses out.
So, that's so funny.
45 minutes, and then we go out and get some swings. But so, yeah, no, I grew up in that era for sure.
That's hilarious. Yeah, I remember having those VHS tapes of my swing back when I was in college. I remember that fondly. So that's pretty hilarious. Well, let's transition for a minute and talk about how you got connected with Jared, how long you guys have been working together, and just start with that, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah. So I remember the first time, you know, Jared and I played together. I think it was at Hurstbourne Country Club in the Kentucky Open. And he was, I think, still in college or just out of college. I believe still in college. And so I met him then, you know, great kid, hit a long way, fairly unpolished because I was like my first year playing full time. You know, it was and we had a blast, like loved the guy. Like he was such a great kid. But, you know, hit a long way, but just unpolished. You know, so from that event, I went and played, you know, full time for a bit. You know, he obviously went back to college or whatever. Then he contacted me a little bit after school and was like, hey, I want to work on some putting. And then, so we did that for a little bit. And then, kind of reconnected, I guess it was a couple years ago, to go on this journey. And so back before then, I just mainly did putting and some short game with him. But now since we reconnected and I'm glad I'm nowhere near good, but I'm not near as bad as I was back then, if that makes sense. So, you know, I feel like I'm a little more equipped for a player like that. And so it's been great to kind of reconnect and just go through this journey with him because, you know, I watched him play. I was with him for 2 days back then. I still could tell you his golf swing from back then. Know his golf swing now. And you know, it's funny. You asked my wife, I can't remember what happened yesterday. You asked me what Jared Wolf swing is from 2000, whatever. Yeah, I could tell you that. So like,
I know. You know,
it's been nice to, you know, kind of reconnect and kind of get this ball rolling. But it's funny, like, I mean, he was really good before he came, you know, before he reached out to me, you know what I'm saying? Like he was playing great, you know? And so, so I wasn't really sure, like, okay, you know, yes, I would love to help obviously, but I don't just want to ride the train. Right. I want to help, you know? So, that was a lot of conversation, you know, back and forth and where do I fit in? Where can I help you? You know, cause I just, like I said, I just don't want to be somebody who just rides the train when the train's rolling, you know, I want to be a part of this process to get you where you want to be. So yeah, it's been awesome, man. It's been good.
When did that reconnection happen? When you really got serious about, hey, let's really start working together on the full swing, the full game. When was that time period?
That was right before he won on the Korn Ferry.
Late 2019, something like that.
Yeah. 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 He's way better at dates than him. Just before then. And honestly, man, I was like, okay, so, you know, you had won down there on the, Latin American tour. You'd won. So what do you want me to do? You know? And I actually was kind of hesitant because I was like, look, I don't want to mess this up. You know what I'm saying? Like, great kid, great guy. Obviously playing well, like I don't want to be the reason why this goes south. So what do you want me to do? And he goes, well, you know, I feel like you can help me and take me to the next level. And I'm like, well, I think I can help, but at the same token, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, you're playing pretty well. So we just kind of broke it down and kept it simple. You know, he told me his, you know, his thoughts and his likes and dislikes and swing changes and this and this. And, you know, obviously it wasn't a reinvent the wheel project. It was just to kind of, you know, help him with some shots that he felt like he couldn't hit, help those get better, help him with some short game stuff that he felt like he was struggling with. And that was kind of it. You know, and that's, I'm very, very inquisitive with tour players who come in and want help. You know, because they don't need a lot. You know what I'm saying? Like, they don't need a lot of help. What are the small things that you need help with? And then we have to stay focused on those small things and then measure, you know, your successes and figure out how to make those better and measure them through practice.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you know, he won down on the PGA Tour Latino America. So clearly, if you're able to win a professional golf tournament, you pretty much know what you're doing. It's probably not anything dramatic that needs to be changed or altered. And so kudos to you for not, you know, taking that. I know some teachers take the approach of my way or the highway. I'm going to teach how to swing the way I think. But it sounds like you really have the approach of, you know, every player has their swing. They figure it out. There's obviously some fundamentals that you can work on and improve. But for the most part, if they've got that swing figured out, you know, your job is just to help them believe in that swing and take it to the tournament. Is that about right?
Yeah, that's 100%. I mean, every player has their thumbprint, just like we all have our own thumbprint. We have our own fingerprint. But the same token, like you said, there are some things that pretty much every great ball striker does. They're very simple things. And so it's like, you know, if you're doing X and the greatest ball striker's doing this, then let's work on this to try to help you get to where you want to go. You know what I'm saying? And that's a little bit what we're going through now. You know what I'm saying? With these few weeks off that we have, to try to make some minor changes to help him get to where he wants to be.
So someone of Jared's caliber, how often are you guys working? How often are you talking? Is he sending you videos of his swing? I mean, what is that back and forth like throughout a season as he's competing?
Well, we typically talk every week. He's typically sending me videos every 1 to 2 weeks. I'm very hands-on. Hey, how's it going? How you doing? You know what I'm saying? How's everything feeling? How you doing? I'm typically that every 3 to 4 days. Now that's probably pretty naggy and annoying. You know what I'm saying? to him and maybe most players, but I just want to know, how you doing? How you feeling? Cause I want to bridge that gap. I want to bridge that communication gap, man. It's terrible. Okay, let's figure it out. Everything's going great. Okay, since it's going great, send me a video. So that way we've got what feels good. You know what I'm saying? But let's do some 3D stuff on what feels good. And so I'm always, hey, how's it going? How you feeling? What's going on? You know, like this week, how you doing? Well, I don't feel very good. I feel tired. Okay, cool. Get some rest. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I'm always asking, you know, weekly, as far as how things are going, how you doing, especially going into an event 2 weeks before, because there's a certain game plan you have to go to. Like if a player tells you, in my opinion, 2 weeks before things doesn't feel good. Okay. You have a week. And so, or 4 or 5 days. And so 4 or 5 days, you have to get to where they're comfortable. And then the next, you know, week and a half, they're trying to go game mode on what you just worked on. So, I'd rather know ahead of time. So I'm constantly asking.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I can only imagine that, you know, when you are working on a fundamental, when you are working on even a minor change, you know, the ability to work on the change, but then to trust it in a tournament, to take it to the course, has got to be the most challenging part of that whole process.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, the one thing Jared does such a good job with is the mental aspect. You know, I mean, there's so many times that everything feels so good, but he doesn't play great. You know, and he's not your typical player, man. I mean, honestly, most players go straight into golf swing. Well, I didn't hit it great because of my golf swing. He goes right into, where was I mentally? You know what I'm saying? How did I approach that shot? You know, did I mentally commit to it? Did I not commit to it? You know, what was my prep beforehand? I mean, he goes right into that more than anybody that I've ever teached, which in return makes my job sound easier, because he's not putting the blame directly on golf swing stuff. But you know, in reality, that's what it's all about. I mean, it's, how'd you feel? Did you commit to it? Because honestly, you look at all these swings on tour, they're committed swings, and every one of these swings look completely different. And so to me is, well, if all the swings look different, but they're all committed, well, the common denominator is they're committed. So if you can commit to the shot, regardless of what you have going on, it's probably going to turn out okay. You know what I'm saying? He's really good.
I think that's true for amateurs too, because even though, you know, obviously we pretty much suck, there are those moments where you stand over a shot and you just feel like, I know I can hit the shot. I know what the shot is, and you commit to it and you hit a good shot. And so even us, you know, as amateurs that aren't great, we have those little, you know, split second moments where we do feel that level of confidence and commitment towards a swing, and usually see the result that comes out of that. And so doing that, you know, 65, 70 times on every shot, you know, putts, chips, everything. That's why those guys are so good, because they literally can do that every shot. You know, that's really impressive.
Yeah. Well, I think what amateurs and pros have so much in common is that they try to do too much. They're trying to hit the perfect shot, or they're trying to shape this, or they're trying to do this. You know, I mean, just hit the shot that you're comfortable with, you know, and you know, that was a huge conversation that Jared and I had, like, just hit the green. Let's be simple, simplify things, you know, because he's, you know, they have these yardage books that are, you know, all different colors, you know what I'm saying, that show all these different slopes. And it's just like, I get that, you know, you're trying to hit off this, so the ball rolls to X to give you a putt for this. Let's start with just hitting the green. You know what I'm saying? Then once you're able to do that after the first two or three holes, then you can start to dial in as far as being a little bit more specific. Same thing with amateurs. You know, oh, it's a back right pin, I'm going to hack cut. Well, what's your shot? Well, it's a draw. Okay, so you literally don't practice cuts. So why are you trying to hit a cut? You know what I'm saying? Like, let's go with what limited time you have to practice because of family, work, all this stuff, you know, legit. You know, let's just hit the shot that you're comfortable with. Just hit the green and make a par. There's not a lot of guys, not a lot of amateurs out there to shoot even, you know, so no. Par is a score. No.
Yeah. I mean, I think you can even go further back and say, let's just hit the little ball before we hit the big ball. Sometimes it's not like you're really, let's just focus on something like that, you know, so.
That is a big deal. Well, that's a big deal.
I heard somewhere, I don't know if this stat is correct or not, but I heard somewhere that like 90% of all golfers that are all people that pick up a golf club don't break 100. And that may be wrong, but there's certainly a high percentage of golfers that certainly don't shoot even or break 90, one over par, you know, bogey golf. You know, it's a tough game. I think you're right. Simplifying it and just lowering the expectations for amateurs in particular, but also for pros in some cases. I mean, Tiger Woods in his best years only hit about 73% of the greens. So he was missing a quarter of the greens, you know, as the best player in the world ever, right?
Well, then you saw the stat where how many greens he missed from 120 yards.
I think if you ask an amateur, they'd be like, none, but that's not true.
Yeah, no, like that's insane. Like, I mean, it's amazing how many greens. Now, he was probably pin hunting, you know what I'm saying? And right. I get that. A guy at his level is pin. Plus, his short game is phenomenal. You know what I'm saying? So he was probably okay with missing the green. You know, and like if we miss the green from that distance and short side of ourselves, you know, bogey's definitely in play with him. He had such a great short game. So his fear level was a lot lower than most. But still, it's still the ability to hit the shot, you know? So the fact that he missed so many greens from 120 was an insane stat that I saw. You know, but his ability to recover from that is way different than anybody else's. So you can't take that stat and apply to your own game. Like, oh, okay, so I can miss X amount of greens from 120. Well, no, you don't have the ability level to get up and down like he does. So it's a little different.
Exactly. But still,
it's still crazy to think that he missed those greens. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I mean, that's insane.
Do you follow Lou Stagner on Twitter?
I do not. I try.
He's a great follow.
I try not to watch golf unless my players are playing. I try not to, like, this is terrible. Well,
Lou Stagner is a golf stat pro, and he comes up with those types of stats where he's like, hey, listen, the best golfers in the world only hit, you know, 8 fairways around. So if you're upset because you only hit 6, like, maybe you should change your expectations. Like, it kind of talks to the
same
thing.
That's a great 100%. That would be a great follow for anybody.
Well, let's get back to this. I wanted to ask you a couple of questions specifically about Jared and working with him. You've now been working with him consistently for about the last 2 years and probably holistically, you know, 4 or 5 years in terms of working with Jared. Couple of questions. What's been the best part of his game so far? Like the thing that he does the best, that you can almost count on it. What have you noticed is the best part of his game?
You're talking about from a skill set perspective or a mental perspective or anything.
Let's talk more around the skill, like hitting the shots. You know, what part of the game, driver, irons, wedges, putting, chipping? What have you noticed has just been consistently solid?
I think for him, obviously hitting it long, right? I mean, that's a big one for him. But his driver is pretty solid. I mean, when he's playing well, he hits his driver well. And that's a club that never really has been an issue, as far as from our perspective. Now, there doesn't mean that it hasn't been, every once in a while, but I know when his game is not the best is when he's like, man, I'm not hitting my driver well. Then I'm like, oh goodness, we have to really start looking at some things. He's usually a fairly straight driver of the ball. You know, for his for how long he hits it. Most guys, from his length, don't hit it very straight. you know what I'm saying, that hit it that far. So that's something that's pretty consistent for him, which is really impressive to watch. It's fun to watch.
It is fun to watch. In fact, I have a fun story about that. We were playing at TPC Sawgrass back in January of 2021, excuse me, this past January. And we were on 16 and we were on the tee. And I said, what's the shortest club you've hit into this green, you know, in the past? And he's like 6 iron. And I kind of had to rib him a little bit. I was like 6 iron. I'm like, pretty sure Bryson's hit like a 9 iron or something, like 6 iron. That's it. And he just turned a little bit left, took a more aggressive line. And I mean, he bombed one over those trees. It was such a beautiful thing to see. And he hit an 8 iron in that day. So I kind of joked with him. I'm like, you just need somebody just to rib you a little bit on every tee when you got the driver in your hand and you'll hit. It happened at Houston. He was going to miss the cut. He was walking off at 17. I was standing there. He walks past me and, you know, you would think a guy might be dejected. Like, you know, he's had two really long days at that tournament. What happened with, you know, just getting in late and all that. So he had two really long days. He's going to miss the cut. He's, you know, he's got the next hole. He walks past me and he's got this little smile, this little grin. He goes, watch this one. And so he just absolutely unloads. I've never seen him swing this hard out of his shoes and just piped it. He was 30 yards past his playing competitors, which most of the day he'd been pretty much even with them.
Yeah.
He was 30 yards past him right in the middle of the fairway. And I'm like, dude, you just need somebody just to rib you on every driver that you hit and you'll crank one. But no, his driver is really unbelievable to watch. It's a lot, especially when you're up close, like getting to stand on the tee box and watch him hit that shot. It's amazing.
Oh yeah. Well, and also like his 3-wood, like that doesn't go much shorter. Like his 3-wood
hammer. Yeah, it's a legit driver. It's for most people. Like, it's a legit driver. It's insane.
And so to your question, you know, to me, the strongest point of his game is exactly what you're just talking about. Like, yes, his driver is strong. He hits his driver. But his ability to do things when it needs to happen, that's impressive. You know, his ability to not, you know, to keep a positive attitude when things aren't great, that's impressive to me. So to me, like, those two things are hugely important in this game. Because this game is hard. It's brutal. It beats you down. So his ability to just move on and keep going, that to me, that's a huge attribute to him. From a skill set perspective, his driver's pretty good too.
No, I think you're right on both. And certainly the mental aspect is the part that's allowed him to, you know, persevere and endure and see success, where I think a lot of guys might've packed it in and that's just not who he is and not what he does. But if I do ever get a chance to caddy for him, I think I'm just going to have to rib him like on every,
I'm like,
you had 7 iron in here yesterday. Like, what was that all about? Just to see what he'd do. Cause it'd be a lot of fun, so let me ask you a different question. So you've been working with for 2 years. What's the part of his game that has improved the most during that time?
His chipping and putting. You know, I think his chipping and putting has improved a good amount. Iron play has been pretty solid as well. But overall his chipping and putting has improved a really, you know, when he won on the Corn Ferry, it was his putting. You know what I'm saying? His putting, he was putting well. And it's way better than it used to be. Can it get a little bit better? Yes, but it's not like we need to reinvent the wheel. So right now, like what we were really focused on, you know, down in Georgia was solid contact with chipping. It's crazy, you know. You talk about fundamentals, that type of stuff. You know, just getting his chipping, just the solid contact. If you get a tour player to hit it solid, they will figure out anything they need to figure out. And we were on the phone today. I was like, "How's your chipping?" He goes, "Dude." He goes, since we worked down in Georgia, he goes, I went and did a chipping contest with a buddy of mine who's a good chipper, you know, obviously at TPC, and he goes, I waxed him. And I'm like, perfect. You know what I'm saying? Like, you give a tour player the ability to hit it solid, they're going to figure out in less than 10 minutes, and they're going to wear you out. And so the fact that is still going, because he just has to get a little bit better with the hard shots. You know what I'm saying? Like, just – instead of 10 feet, we need 6 feet. You know what I'm saying? And really easy shot. Instead of 3 feet, we need 2 feet. It's just little things like that over the course of 4 rounds make a massive difference. You know what I'm talking about? When you're talking about mental fatigue, making putts, you know, the difference between making a, a 4-footer and a 6-footer, you know, statistically is, you know, a fairly big deal.
It's a big difference, right?
Just little things like that, that add up after the course of four rounds. Cause I mean, over the course of four rounds, you're only talking about 3 or 4 shots a round, or 3 or 4 shots a tournament. Sorry. And so like, that's a big deal. 1 shot a round, you know what I'm saying? Like if we could have improved 3 shots, you know, per tournament, you know, that his, where he is right now would be completely different. You know what I'm saying? Just shots. You know what I'm saying? So that's a big deal, you know, out there at this level. Korn Ferry, kind of, sort of, but the PGA Tour, it's a big deal.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing about Jared is when that ball's going the hole, he's really hard to beat. And he's a front runner, too. That's the thing I've also noticed about Jared is he loves to get out front. When he's out front, he's actually more comfortable. And a lot of players out front, they aren't as comfortable. And 100%. So it's really interesting with his mental game, how that works for him. I got 2 quick stories. One is just a story on Jared, and the other one's a shameful brag. So the first one is this. I was watching him. He was playing at Texas Rangers Golf Club on the Korn Ferry Tour last year. Short par 3, 110 yards with a left pin right on the edge. And literally there was a shaved bank down to a car path. I mean, that's where it was. He pulls it just a little bit. He hits it onto the car path. He gets a drop. He drops it onto that Texas deadpan, the hard pan, and just thin lie. I mean, there's nothing there, right? And these are the kind of lies that, you know, most amateurs, we either chunk them or we skull them. I mean, you know, they go all over the place with us.
Oh, yeah.
He took this you know, pretty big swing for, it was only like a 6-yard shot. You know, he probably had 3 yards to the green and another 3 yards on or something like that. He takes this big swing, nips it perfectly, lands it just on the green, and it rolls down and goes in the hole. And I'm thinking to myself, that's a 2-shot swing for a pro to an amateur right there.
Oh, yeah. Just
what those guys can do in a situation like that with a tight lie, no green to work with. And they're able to turn that into a birdie or at least a par. It's just so much fun to see. So I've definitely seen his chipping continue to improve, which is pretty cool. All right. So here's the shameful brag. So when I was down with him at TPC, we did this little putting contest. Have you ever played the game 21 on the putting green? Do you know how you're familiar with that?
Absolutely. Okay.
So we had this in college. We play this after every practice round. We play 21. There's some kind of unique rules to it. You have to land on 21 and some things like that. If you've never played 21 out there, it's a phenomenal way to practice putting because it's competitive and fun and a good time. So Jared had never played 21. So, or at least he told me he never played. Maybe we'll find out if that's true or not.
Yeah, exactly.
So we go on the green, we start playing 21, and I just had one of those days where I just, you know, felt really good on the green, and I beat him. I won't say I waxed him, but I beat him like 21 to 14 and felt really good about myself after
that's
that.
That's close to a waxing.
Well, it was like 18 to 6, and then he started making some putts. So I was way ahead, and then I was able just to barely hold on, but I'm taking that one to the grave. I'm very excited that I was able to say I got one over on him. That's it. Just one. The second story about that is this. We were on the 17th at TPC Sawgrass. He hits it to 4 feet with a 9-iron. And he's like, hey, if you can get inside that, I'll pay for dinner. I was like, okay. So I hit a 7-iron. So he hit a 9-iron. I hit a 7-iron and I hit it up on the ridge and it starts coming back. And I was like 6 feet away. So I was outside of his shot, but I was so close. I almost having 2 up on him, but I only got 1 up on him. So that's my shameful brag.
21 chipping.
I have not played 21 chipping. I mean, I guess I have a little bit, but not in the same way, but that would actually be a good drill as well.
Yo, 20. Awesome. Well, first of all, it's 2 balls and the closest. So if you make it, it's 5 points.
Right.
And so, you know, and if you, and the, well, say if nobody makes it, the first one gets 3 points. The first ball gets 3 points. The second closest ball gets 1 point. And first one at 21 wins. And so you got to do 21 with 2 balls chipping. That's a blast too. We played that tons professionally, before and after rounds. That's a great, cause you can stymie it. There's all kinds of stuff you can do with it.
Anytime you can practice and be competitive, that is such a critical key to getting better.
Yeah.
Is to make
and
your
you can,
practice
you can have as many people as you want because the more balls, the better. There's more stymies. So it's a lot of fun.
Do you ever do drills like that with your students, like reverse best ball? I don't know if you've ever done that. Or some people call it worst ball. You know, where you have to hit 2 shots off a tee and you have to play the worst one.
Yes.
And you play it all the way in. Yeah.
We do tons of worst ball scrambles with our kids. Tons of just worst ball straight up, worst ball chipping, worst ball putting. We do.
That's the worst one, by the way. Putting is the worst because if you make one, it doesn't count. You got to do it again.
it's funny. You have so many different rules with worst ball. You know, it's like, do you play worst ball until you get on the green, or do you play worst ball and, you know, until you putt out?
We play worst ball until you putt out.
Yeah, 100%. Worst ball scramble till you putt out is brutal because you're always looking at that one person like, you're going to make this or you're going to miss this again. You know what I'm saying? It just puts the pressure on one person nonstop. And so it's a great game to play.
I think that's one of the critical aspects to getting better in the process is just finding ways to be competitive. My roommate and I, we used to hit balls on the range in college and we would, it was 5 cents a shot cause we were broke. And so we'd hit balls for hours and somebody might win $1.50 if they're really playing well, but you know, it just added that little competitive, you know, $1.50, you know, you hit quite a few better shots than that guy, 30 better shots, you know? So,
you know, it's funny you say that because I really feel like Jared owes me money from Georgia. Well, you have to ask him for the next
time. I'm sure he does.
I feel like, you know, he kind of went rogue. It was like, oh, that was worth it. You know, this, and this. And I'm like, okay, cool. You know, so I feel like he owes me like $1.50 since our last one.
We're going to have to check on that. And there's interest. Yeah, you're racking up the interest at this point.
Yeah. He needs to Venmo me that. I'm waiting to pay my mortgage. So if he could do that.
That's awesome. So let me ask you this question. So we'll kind of wrap it up here with a few more, you know, being out on tour, you know, Jared's traveling and seeing some new courses. What are your plans to get out there? And do you want to be out there more often? Does he want, like, have you guys talked about that? Are you trying to stay kind of out of the spotlight a little bit and just let him get used to it? What's the approach there here in a new environment to be on the PGA Tour?
Well, I think the biggest thing is you don't change what you're doing. You know what I'm saying? You can't, in my opinion, if you're a guy who's used to kind of being out there on your own and doing your own thing and you're successful in that, like he was in the Corn Ferry, then all of a sudden when you get on tour, you can't, oh, well, I need you every week. Okay, well, what are we going to do? You know what I'm saying? Like, you're already adjusting to so many new things out there. Well, now you're going to have to adjust to me being out there every week. You know what I'm saying? So what are we doing? You know, so I'm a firm believer in it's not, you know, it's not making these huge adjustments or it's not making these huge changes. Let's just get a little bit better and a little more efficient at what we currently do to get you to where you need to go on a different level, if that makes sense. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah. You know, we talked about it. I plan on being out there 8 times this year. And just, you know, it's funny because last time I was out there in Georgia, you know, Jared was like, you know, I feel like I'm finally starting to get comfortable with what we do out here, you know, when you're here, that type of stuff. And that's legit. You know what I'm saying? If you're not used to having your coach out there, you know, you're not used to having, you know, another mouth telling you, giving you this information that you trust. And so then it's his choice to decipher it. You know, when do you do it? You know what I'm saying? And so how does that work? You know what I'm saying? But now that, you know, I was out there a little bit for the Corn Ferry and I've been out a couple of times for his tour card, you know, how does this work while we're out there? And, you know, honestly, that's a learning process for me as well. You know, how much do I give him? How much do I not give him? You know, I'm a very informational guy. I was a very informational player. You know, give me all you got and I'll cipher through it. You know what I'm saying? And so that's me. That's not Jared. I'm not, you know, that's just different personalities. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, how do I, you know, handle those situations? How do I, you know, get him to where he needs to be and where he wants to focus? Very simply, you know what I'm saying? You know, I'm a teacher, so my job is to know more information than anybody, you know what I'm saying, about anybody, about his swing, about, you know, other swings that may pertain to him. You know, that's my job. So how do I relate to that simply? You know, with, oh, by the way, we only have 2 days before he has to play, you know, a golf tournament that he's trying to make the cut and win a tour event. It's my thing is keep it simple. You know what I'm saying? Let's not do anything different than what we've always done and just kind of go about that. So that's kind of what we've planned that around.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. I can't wait to get back out there at a tournament that you're at. The one that we got to be at together was really fun, just to walk the ropes and you know, talk about what he's doing out there. And it was really a lot of fun. So I hope we get to do that soon. That'll be
oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'll be out in one of the events in California. I know that if you're gonna be out there.
Oh. We'll have to text and figure it out, because if I can get out there, that would be a blast. Love that.
Okay, I think I'll be a Tory. I think that's one.
Oh well, I mean, why wouldn't I go to that? We should definitely make that one happen for sure.
Well, you know, it's funny. The other California events, there's like four golf courses that they play. You know what I'm saying? Like, so right. It's like, you know, so now he's had to learn those golf courses while I'm out there. Like, to me, that's overload. You know what I'm saying? And so, yeah. I mean, I think we're looking at Tory right now. That's kind of the main one we're looking at. You know what I'm saying? Cause I don't know how beneficial it'd be for me to be out at these other golf courses when he's solely trying to learn how to play other golf courses that never played before. Yeah. You know, so I'm not sure how much of a help or hindrance I'd be, you know what I'm saying, out there. I've never played those golf courses, so I don't, you know what I'm saying? I can get on Google Earth and that type of stuff, but so can he.
So that's working. We talked about that with Tillis, you know, about, you know, when you're playing second year of a tour, you generally know the courses before you go there. There's a level of comfort, level of just knowing. I mean, think about an amateur that plays a course, and how many times, I mean, I do this all the time. I play a course and I go, man, I wish I could play this again, because now I know where not to hit it. I know where I want to miss, where a lot of times when you're playing the first time, you don't know the different slopes on the greens and things like that. So, you know, just having that familiarity, it will be so much better year two. But year one, just like you said, it increases the challenge, makes it much more challenging and difficult to get ready and play well. So, but I'm looking forward to seeing you out there.
Oh, absolutely. Me too. One, from an amateur standpoint, I mean, how many times do they score great on their home course, and as soon as they play a match on another course they never played before, they're terrible.
Right.
It's the same thing. You know what I'm saying? It's just, you have to get comfortable out there. You know what I'm saying? Yep. You just have to figure out how to play that golf course.
Yeah, golf is one of those weird games. It's a game of comfort. I remember when I was trying to break 80 for the first time, it was hard. But then once you got comfortable in the 70s, it felt uncomfortable to be in the 80s. And you'd make birdies at the end of the round to get the 70s. And I remember when I started getting close to par, it was uncomfortable. And then after you shoot par a few times, now it's uncomfortable to be three or four over par. And then you break 70. And then, you know, it's like the whole game is about comfort in many ways.
100%.
Once you figure out your swing. So that's really critical. So let's give the people what they want. I'm going to ask you a couple of questions, just some fun things that you might have some insight on, and we're going to call it a day. Okay.
Sounds good. No, all right. Nervous.
No, don't be nervous. Not at all. We won't talk about what you're wearing right now or anything like that. Don't worry about that. So quick question. What's the best club manufacturer? If you were just going to advise somebody on good clubs, where would you send them first?
I mean, Callaway is fantastic. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm going to be honest. If you get truly fit, there's not anywhere that's not any good anymore. You know what I'm saying? Back in the day, it was TaylorMade. You know, TaylorMade had the best of everything. Titleist had good wedges, good irons. Mizuno had the best irons. You know, back in the day, it was way different. Now, I mean, they're all good. I've had a lot of experience with Callaway. We're Callaway sponsored. So I've had that experience with Callaway. I mean, they're fantastic. Jared would obviously argue Strixon, which I totally get, because the irons that they made for Jared in Georgia, Strixons, dude, they were fantastic. They're phenomenal. You know, but Callaway to me has a solid driver, solid irons, just phenomenal wedges, and great putters. So, I mean, as an overall company, they do a great job. You know what I'm saying? They're fantastic.
No, that's great. And I think you actually said the critical thing at the beginning, and that is more important than the club manufacturer is getting fitted.
Yes.
How much, like, talk just a brief moment about the value of getting fitted.
Man, it's huge. Because there are a lot of aspects of your game that they can fix through a fitting just as well as an instructor can do through a lesson. And so if you have the equipment fit for you, then you're already eliminating a lot of the things that could happen. I had a junior this morning, you know, they went down to, she's a really good junior, high level, went down and played down south and had issues with tight lies. Well, she had a wedge that the grind and the bounce wasn't fit for tight lies. So, you know, we're going to change that, you know, through her fitter, we're going to change the equipment to help her with the situation. And so, you know, fittings are massive. I mean, you have to get fit. If you're relatively serious about getting to a level that you've never been before, you have to get fit.
Yeah. And this is one of the few sports where that's the case. You know, you think about basketball, baseball, football, you play with the same size ball. You don't really have equipment that needs to be fit except maybe like pads or something like that. But for the most part, you don't have that. Golf is one of those unique sports where the tools that you're using really matter more than probably any other sport. And a lot of people don't necessarily understand that. They think they're just going to go buy, you know, Tigers now with TaylorMade. So I'm going to go buy some TaylorMade irons. or, you know, Brooks Koepka just signed with Strixon. I'm going to go buy some Strixon irons without going through the process of actually getting fitted. I think that's really critical.
No, for sure. Well, the sports you named, I mean, the athlete's expected to adjust to the ball, to the bat, to all that stuff. Well, golf, that's supposed to marry what you do. You know what I'm saying? The supposed to marry what you do, your load patterns, all that stuff. You know, it's supposed to help what you do. The other sports, you're as an athlete, you're supposed to adjust. You know, so they're two completely different sports.
Yeah. Okay. Next question. What's the best course you've ever played?
Oh man, I've not played tons. I will say Kiwa, the Ocean Course, is probably like visually one of my favorite golf courses to play. As far as now, I played on a day where it wasn't windy. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah, that's pretty important out there.
I know, like I didn't get the full experience. So I was like, okay, I mean, I shot 71. I'm like, this course isn't that hard, right? I had two lost balls in greenside bunkers because they plugged. I'm like, okay, that's a joke. That shouldn't happen. And so I'm like, I shot one under with two lost balls in a greenside bunker that plugged. I'm like, this really course isn't that hard. So I know it's brutally hard, like obviously from my perspective, when I went and played Bethpage, that course was, as far as skill set, that course was fantastic. So if I got to play Kiwa on a windy day, I would think that would be my all time, like, most challenging favorite golf course to play from a view perspective and also from a skill set perspective. But
yeah.
So yeah, Bethpage and probably Kiwa are my two top. Well, those are the two best courses.
And Kiwa Island, home of the PGA Championship 2014, I believe, yeah. Or one of the 2011, maybe 2012. I can't remember one of those. And the Ryder Cup. So I had a major and a Ryder Cup, which is pretty cool.
It's an awesome place. It's a cool place.
Okay, last question. This one's for the amateurs especially. How should amateurs decide which tee they should play? This is a really critical one where I think, you know, playing the wrong tees is an epidemic in golf. How would you advise amateurs on how to pick what tee to play?
Which one do you have more fun with? I personally dictate fun with difficulty. I have fun playing a difficult golf course. You know what I'm saying? So I like to play all the way back. You know what I'm saying? And I go play that. Now, if you associate your score with fun, then play up. You know what I'm saying? If you want to go have a good time and you dictate your score with fun, then play up. But if you like the challenge, then play back. But you damn well better play fast. You know what I'm saying?
That's like, right. That's the most important thing, right? Play fast wherever you play it from.
I've seen people that shoot 100 take less than 2 hours. You know what I'm saying? You know, I've seen people that shoot 70 or 68 take 6 hours. You know what I'm saying? So it's all relative. But as far as, you know, because it's your round, you're paying for it. You know, you want to enjoy yourself. So it depends on what you enjoy. I want to go play. If I'm going to go play a golf course, I don't play golf much anymore. But if I'm going to play, I want to play 1 foot in the rough all the way back. And that's how I have fun. Now, I don't take very long. I ain't looking for golf balls. You know what I'm saying? You know, I'm going to get to the as fast as I can to have a couple bourbons, you know, along with thinking for the back. Like, that's how I have fun. But it's going to take me less than 4 hours. You know, but if you equate score with that type of stuff, then just move up and just have a good time. Enjoy yourself.
Well, this is the great thing about golf, is that you can change it up, and it's really fun. So if you wanted to have a challenge, you can move back. If you wanted to move up front, hit more wedges and see what you can do, you know, hitting wedges all day, which a lot of the pros, that's what a lot of some of the courses, that's all they're doing, is hitting wedges all day, you know, see if you can score. I mean, you still have to hit the shots and make the putts. I love that about golf, but I would echo that. I think that, you know, what I love about some of the courses and what they're doing now is they used to have the tees based upon like gender or age, and now they're basing it on handicap, which I 100%. Think is great. You know, like, if you don't break 80, then scoot up, you know, or whatever it might be. I think that's critical.
I think they should do the tees based on how long it takes you to play. You know, honestly, I mean, seriously, there are people that could shoot 100 faster than people that shoot 68.
Yeah. And very
true. If it takes you 5 hours to shoot 68 from all the way back, you need to play up at the Reds.
Yeah.
You know, because I mean, you know, if golf took 3 hours, more people would play. I mean, let's be honest. Part of the problem is, you know, and that's why could be a whole nother conversation, but I think that's why there needs to be more par three courses. Par three courses, you know, you get a good solid par three course. I went and played down at Old Stone. They have it's called the Sinkhole. They have a 9-hole par 3, and it's one of the most unbelievable 9-hole par 3 courses I've ever played. And it took us 45 minutes, and it was phenomenal. We had a blast. There needs to be more of that in golf.
Yeah. Yeah. I love playing par threes when I was first learning. I felt like it was just a great way to get a lot of really good shots in and focus on short game, focus on putting and things like that. I know I said that was the last question, but I got one more for you. Being from Louisville, Kentucky, what's the best course in Louisville that nobody's ever heard of or that somebody has to play if they come to Louisville?
Oh, I mean, of course I'm going to say Persimmon Ridge because that's where I'm at. You know what I'm saying? That's not
the only exempt you from that. Let's say not Persimmon. So we got that. What's the next one?
Hurstbourne Country Club is fantastic. You know, all these people are all over Valhalla, this. Don't get me wrong, Valhalla's great, but Valhalla, you know, it's good, but Hurstbourne Country Club is fantastic. Now it's a private club, obviously, but Hurstbourne has one of the best layouts in the city. If I were to play anywhere other than Persimmon, that would be it. I love it.
I was going to say, do you have any contacts over there?
Over there. I can get you on Hirschberg and Harpy. One of my best friends is the head pro there, or he's now the GM. But dude, that place, golf course is always in great shape. They move the pins around, which totally changes the golf course. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you want to play a golf course that they change the pins, the golf course changes. Just like Persimmon, you change the pins, it's a different golf course. Valhalla, they change the pins, it's the same golf course. So it's a different, in my opinion, and you know, everybody has their opinion, it's a different feel. Hurstbourne and me personally in Louisville is one of my favorite golf courses to play besides Persimmon.
Well, I'm seeing a golf trip in my future, so we're gonna have to make that happen.
You gotta come around Derby. I mean, that's a no-brainer.
Oh, that too. I'm thinking this is like a week trip. You know, my kids love horse racing and horses in general. So I'm thinking this could be like a little RV trip, a little, you know, 4 or 5 day, go to the race and go play 3 or 4 rounds. Oh, I think we make that happen.
We have golf courses you can play. I mean, let me know. We can get you in. You can bring your RV if you want. I got plenty of places you can stay. You and your family. I mean, that's a no-brainer. It'd be a blast.
Oh, let's do it. I'm all for it. And of course, you're making me excited for the spring and better weather already. Well, hey, listen, Corey, thanks so much for being on the podcast, man. It's great to talk to you and hear, you know, how you got into the game and how you're working with Jared and just your thoughts on golf. So we really appreciate you taking the time to jump on with us.
Absolutely, Trey. Man, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, man, we'll talk soon.
All right, sounds good.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Full Send Podcast, an inside look at Jared Wolf's journey on the PGA Tour. If you enjoy this episode, be sure to give us a like and leave a comment. That will help others find us easier. And until next time, hit them long and hit them straight. We'll see you soon.